coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. This is issue 298. We are so close to 300. I can taste it.
Yes, it's in the air.
And by that, I mean we're going to be dining in hell, Cole.
That's right.
I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston. You out there, Cole?
I am out here, and I'm just thrilled to be this far along.
I know. It feels like we're in, like, the fourth trimester, eighth trimester. Tri means...
We're coming up like the 298th trimester.
Each one of these shows is a child that we've created from our loins with Cole's seed in my womb, all right?
That's right. I just constantly... I just keep Andy barefoot and pregnant.
Somebody cut that into a show, will you please?
Absolutely.
Good Lord. There was something, but speaking of, I still have it on my voicemail. You left me a voicemail like last week, and I'm going to see if I can dig it out. I know I saved it. I need to send it to myself because you did something that I want to cut into like the end of every show, and I don't remember what it was, but I'm going to have to dig it out and find out. But that's not.
I certainly don't remember what I said. As soon as something falls out of my brain,
it wasn't even like it was just the way you said something. Just I was like, I've gotta keep that. That's one of those things I gotta archive. But that's not what brings us here tonight. Tonight we are in the fourth issue of a story arc that is near and dear to my heart. Cole brought this to the table, and I couldn't be. Cole, what are we doing?
We are going into the fourth of five chapters exploring Green Lantern in all manner of incarnations.
We are. In the first, we kind of did some history, and then we did Green Lantern Corps. And then you posited two really interesting shows to cap this off, which was in Blackest Night and Brightest Day. Some of the trials and then the triumphs of the Green Lantern, and I thought that was really creative.
Oh, thank you. I really wanted to sort of invoke the titles that, of course, are drawn from the Green Lantern oath about making sure you deliver the mail no matter what the weather. But I wanted to, you know, those became arcs unto themselves.
Sure, yeah.
In not too many distant years ago. But I didn't want to just simply do an exploration of those arcs. I wanted to use those titles, those phrases, to effectively explore the deepest depths of disaster and failure known by the Green Lanterns, and then the greatest and brightest triumphs.
And I think it's important as we start into these two. There's something we haven't done. I think we took it on faith that everybody out there understands, you know. So we've talked about Green Lantern, and then we talked about the Green Lantern, you know, Space Force. But we haven't talked about what the power is that the Green Lantern wields. And I think that if we're going to talk about the triumphs and the tragedies of the Green Lantern, I'm walking a razor's edge with some Nazi jokes right now because of the willpower, and I really don't want to go Triumph of the Will, but if we're going to talk about these two things, I think we need to talk about the source of the Green Lantern's power, what makes Hal Jordan Green Lantern or Kyle Rayner or Guy Gardner a superhero on Earth and gives them the ability to be a space cop everywhere else, and that is these rings that they wear. And I think everybody's pretty familiar with a Green Lantern ring, and if they aren't, there are some other podcasts that you should listen to prior to this story arc, because we're not going to do a good job of explaining it. But the ring is essentially a conduit for the user's willpower.
Exactly.
So the I think you and I, Rick, talked about this the first time I ever podcasted. And the reason that Green Lantern is my favorite comic book character and always will be is, you know, it's not about how many gadgets he has. It's not about how strong he is physically, about, you know, about whether he can talk to fish or not. Just coming out of Aquaman, I'm kind of in this.
Everybody has the fish power now.
Yeah, everybody's bought into what Cole and I have known forever, which is Aquaman's hella cool. Deal with it. it's that his entire power set relies on his willpower. And the concept of will, you know, later on in this issue, we're at least going to touch on the spectrum, which is just a weird concept anyway. like he didn't have enough to deal with, and now he's got to deal with this Game of Thrones shit. Like you know, Space Cop wasn't good enough. Now he's got, like, House Targaryen over here.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Fossaways in Game of Thrones. You got your red apple Fossaways and your green apple Fossaways, and a handful of Game of Thrones people get what the hell I'm talking about. So move on.
Well, it is definitely like, you know, you're always welcome in the House of the Undying, and you're like, how did you get here? What color are you? And you're like,
yeah,
boys.
Exactly.
And we're like, when did that happen?
It's like, hey, that's racist.
That's racist. Will isn't the powers talk about, and or I guess the emotion, aren't predicated on being good or evil. They're just so willpower is the conduit of Green Lantern, right? That's the quote unquote emotion. There's still some debate as to whether willpower is an emotion or not, but what are you gonna do? But it's not predicated on willpower being good or evil. Nobody when the ring chooses somebody, it doesn't say, Cole Houston of Sector 2814, you have the most potential for using your willpower for good. It just says you have the most potential for harnessing your great willpower. And it leads to some really interesting situations, both good and bad, for Green Lantern. I think a lot of the brightest day and the blackest night come from his ability to harness that willpower.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, kind of what they're looking for, a prerequisite, as it were.
That's passing the police exam, is having awesome willpower. And I
space police exam.
Space police. There isn't a lot to it, because, you know, you don't have to, like, be physically anything. Like we talked about last issue, you could be a bug or a virus, as long as, you know, so you're not...
As you're a willful bug or virus.
Mm-hmm. As long as you're a whole-headed will bug or virus, you can pass the exam. So, Cole, do you have anything that jumps to mind immediately when we talk about the darkest night, the tragedy of the Green Lantern? We want to start this
I think
hour.
That there is a place you almost have to start.
Is it Electric Avenue?
Well, I'm going to rock down to there.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
And then I'm going to take it higher.
Yeah, you are. So where are you taking this higher to? Where would you like to start?
I think for me the obvious place to start is a place we've been before on this show, and given the... you know, rather sketchy familiarity that I have with the Green Lanterns overall, it's a good place for me to start, because it's in my comfort zone.
Safe harbor.
Yeah, pretty much. And that is, of course, was it Kyle Rayner's girlfriend?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, as Green Lantern lows go.
As comic book lows go.
Yeah, that's... That's one that's a tough one.
So, just to refresh everybody's memory on this, the death of, and we'll get into this too, the death of Hal Jordan, another Green Lantern had to be chosen. And it chose, we talked about it last issue a little bit, it chose Kyle Rayner. Kyle Rayner was a graphic artist that then became a Green Lantern, because I guess his willpower was super awesome, although he could draw, like, mechs.
Yeah, and also pretty much missed every deadline after that.
Right. I mean, that's the thing about being a superhero is, I mean, you can't be a superhero on a point-based attendance system. It's just not going
to
happen.
You can't. It's ruinous to your day job.
Correct. You can't do it. But his major villain, I guess I shouldn't be that. That's tipping the hat. Was Major Force. Major Force was a military guy that got got super villained up and was making his life hell. Major Force
didn't Major Force like get the Captain Atom kind of power treatment?
Yes, yes, yeah, that's exactly what happened. He got the Captain Atom power and became a big bad. was making Kyle Rayner's life hell. And he shows up. Kyle Rayner goes home. He's living with Alicia DeWitt, his girlfriend. Shows up at his house, and she's not there, but there's a note that says there are presents in the fridge. And he opens it up, and it's his dead girlfriend jammed into fridge. So his dead girlfriend jammed into a fridge.
Yeah.
So what this did was cause a chain reaction in comic books. This almost, I would almost consider this to be the touchstone of what we've seen, up through this period of time. It started something in 1994 that continues to be recognized now. It was coined by Gail Simone in 1999 as Women in Refrigerators, which term that came to be, for using female characters as a plot device in male-driven comics, and kind of tossing them away, throwing them away, not investing in building in the story. And I'm not doing a great job of explaining it, but it almost was the touchstone to what we're seeing today, which is fusion. Everything good that we're seeing today with inclusion and greater story arcs and female creators, with creators, is due in part to things like this being called out and recognized. But yes, Cole, that is a that is definitely, you kind of left fielded me with that one, because I wasn't expecting that to come up necessarily, because it's because it's so horrendous.
Yeah, we're just gonna start at the deepest pit, and
I mean, we could talk about Sinestro enslaving his entire race, but I didn't think it was gonna get to we're gonna climb out of this pit like so many Batman, so many Batmen in Dark Knight Rises.
Surprise. Whereas I thought the trailer said surprise.
Surprise.
That's right.
I really wish it would have now. I wish it would have been like, just when, at the moment he pulls himself out over the ledge, just surprise.
Well, the thing is that Bane wasn't the only one where you couldn't understand what the hell people were saying.
Oh, no, it's true.
In the trailers, and one of them was, I could have sworn that Bruce Wayne was saying, "Where does that lead?" And the guy said, "Surprise." He was saying, "What does that mean? Arise."
No, nobody in that movie could speak. You had Bane with a mask on, and you had Batman with his voice, and it was just it was a shit show. It was a decent movie. It was just a shit show.
That's right.
So, yeah, good starting point. I'll take that as a good start. I did want a call back to what we were just talking about prior. We were talking about the fact that will know no good or evil. It's just a concept to be wielded by the best, I guess. I want to talk about, if we're talking about the darkest moments, I think that the darkest moment for Green Lantern in general is just Sinestro as a concept. Because Sinestro is the antithesis of everything that all of the Earth-based Green Lantern.
Well, he goes out of his way to, be that different character, or that different, to break away, as it were.
Yeah. His home planet was, I had to look up the phonetic pronunciation, and he was given the ring because of his willpower. Now, that being said, he then used that willpower to enslave his entire race, and do all kinds of monstrous things on his home planet. He was brought in to be tried for his crimes, and was essentially banished from the Green Lantern to the planet of Quard, where he fell in with one of the, as a customary profession on this planet, they just have weaponers just hanging out.
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's what they do. They weapon, and
they made him his own ring, and from that point on, he swore to basically just be the thorn in the side of any Earthbound Green Lantern, as well as pretty much all of them. Like, you know, it's a revenge thing, as you.
Absolutely, and the thing about it is that he's one of these characters who literally, if he's going to be the bad guy, he has to be the opposite. It's like Crystar, where you had the crystal people and the lava people. There's nothing like Crystar.
The crystal and the lava. No, so as, you know, as it goes, he led to anguish in Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner, John Stewart, every Green Lantern's life, because he discovered Parallax, which is the yellow entity, but he definitely harnessed it. He definitely made it into, you know, what powers his rings, and then developed his competing Green Lantern, which, you know, has to be like the shittiest move in the world to do to somebody, which is say, oh yeah, you got that Green Lantern core? Have you met my Yellow Lantern core? And they're like, what? Why? What are you doing?
Well, and it's sort of like, why now?
Yeah, why would you do
this? How long have you been around in your little funky blue triangle?
What did you read? The crayon. You referred to it as a crayon costume last time.
And then all of a sudden, you got to come along and decide that you're going to have a whole core of you creeps.
Right. But he's, you know, he's Hal Jordan's most prolific and most villain. Constant. One thing I will say about DC, I was thinking about this here today. One thing that DC does a lot, I guess, better than Marvel is have their villains come together to screw with the hero. Marvel
That's true.
Do that a lot. Like, they don't have a Legion of Doom.
Now, with Marvel, you pretty much, if you're going to do that sort of thing, you're going to engage in that kind of behavior. It is because you have elected to basically find some sort of name that works with however many of you there are.
You've stumbled upon the gaggle of evil is good if there's like five of you.
Exactly. But, you know, if you can't come up with something good, it's like, well, there's 17 of us. Let's just go after them separately in Avengers. I'm out of here, guys.
this isn't truth in advertising.
The Sinister Six just locked that in, and it ruined it. Because then it set an unnecessary precedent.
Yes. You don't. That's why I like the Muggerville 7 so much.
Yeah.
Because they aren't beholden. They don't stand on ceremony.
There have been as few as 3 and as many as 46.
And currently active 127 members of the Muggerville 7. I mean, the only thing they did was actually, you know, lift it from Muggerville 6 to Muggerville 7 at some point.
It was a golden age. It was Muggerville 6.
Golden age was Muggerville 6. Silver age was Muggerville 7. Right. It was exactly. after the crisis. but speaking of Parallax, that leads us to the next thing that I want to talk about, which is Parallax and the destruction of Coast City. So,
oh yes,
Emerald Twilight. So there was this whole thing that happened in Coast City as part of the Reign of Superman. The Reign of Superman. That there was this thing called the War World, and they were trying to create a giant the Earth. They wanted to make it the Earth a giant spaceship. Just bear with me. I feel like this is like a Shark Tank pitch gone horribly awry. Like no. Hear me out. So we're gonna take the Earth and we're gonna make it a giant spaceship. But in order to do that, we've got to like hollow out some of it. And we've identified the Coast City as one of the places we got to start hollowing it out. So we're gonna plant a bunch of bombs. And we're going to blow it on up just to start the holes. Like, we're just going to start the holes there.
Well, this is one of those things where you come in and you do that. And then, you know, months later, this contractor comes in and starts to actually do the excavations. It's like, you know, everybody has to drive around Coast City now for months.
That's right.
Waiting for this thing to happen. It's just monotonous. But that's always the way with public works.
That is always the way with public works. I just wish that the infrastructure was better. I mean, maybe Luther is the right choice for president. I don't know.
We're finding that out, so.
But destroys Coast City. And in destroying Coast City, which is Green Lantern's hometown where all of his family lives, you know, all of that, it, like I said earlier, it wrecks his willpower. So it breaks him, essentially. And in breaking him, it left him open to this entity called Parallax. Parallax is what powered the Yellow Lantern's power battery. It's what gave everybody their strength. So it gets all up in Hal Jordan and makes him this horrible, horrible monster that is driven by fear. So it's a parasite that got all up in him, and now he's going to be fear-based. Is what's happening. Did you ever read any of these?
No, but I'm very familiar with Parallax. He became quite a popular character outside of the comics, even rating action figures and lines that were produced for general consumption at toy stores, like, you know, Toys R Us and KB Toys in the mall. You know, places where you wouldn't have expected to find characters that might border on the obscure for a lot of non-readers, you know, but were, I'm sure, thrilling for readers to find in full toy form.
Well, I don't think that you can undersell the comic book popularity of Parallax. Like, he was a big, big, big bad for a while. I think the idea was that he was going to be, they were hoping that he would catch.
Yeah.
You know, they were hoping he would be the thing that caught fire and would be the next Lex, you know, the Joker. And it didn't quite work out that way. But for a long time, Hal Jordan was broken and was the bad guy and proceeded to systematically just beat the holy hell out of every member of the Green Lantern Corps that would come. They would just show up and be like, Hal, we need to talk. And I'll be like, yep, whoop your ass. Next, and then like Kilowog would come down, be like, we need to talk. He's like, yep, whoop your ass. He attempts to recreate Coast City by using the green power battery to do so. Now understand that the rules, because you got to have rules to everything, right? The
rules naturally.
Of the power battery say you can't use your ring for personal gain. So,
that was the one where it was like, don't get high on your own supply? Was that one?
Right, that was pretty much etched in the giant book of OWA. It's like, rule number one, don't get high on your own supply.
I get there's a lot of stuff that I'm aware of that had rules involved.
Everything has
that. And I get them confused with one another, so I'm not sure if that was Green Lantern or you don't talk about the Green Lantern Corps.
The rule number one of the Green Lantern Corps, don't talk about the Green Lantern Corps. Rule number two.
Rule six. There is no rule six.
Of all of the comic book characters, Batman has one. No guns. Yeah. Right? Superman has...
Oh, I remember what it was. It was no flights, no tights. That was the...
Superman has his, like, one... You know, they all have one... With the exception of the Green Lantern, who has, like, 150 rules.
Oh, I know.
It's like, how do you even...
Well, that's why you have to have the lantern. You know, that's why it's sort of semi-sentient. It's sort of like the Lanternpedia.
Okay.
Because you can't do anything without consulting the rule book.
Hey, that's true. That's true. You have to ask. You know, it's like phoning a friend.
Yeah, it was like Ask Ganthet.
It's Ask Ganthet.
It's sort of like the old Ask Jeeves. You know, for you kids who were around 15, 20 years ago when Ask Jeeves was a thing.
Right, but this is when we get Kyle Rayner as the
worse than Bing, by the way.
Worse than Bing.
And that is tough.
But Ask Jeeves or the power battery.
Oh, Ask Jeeves. I'm sure the power battery is much better.
It's like Alexa.
Yeah.
I mean, we're pretty close. We're pretty close to having our own.
Only won't let your pet parrot order off Amazon like Alexa does.
Right. It won't, if it hears a TV say, okay, Alexa, order a dollhouse, it won't order the dollhouse.
Yeah.
But if you have the willpower, it will.
That's true. That's where that comes in handy. And it's, you know, really little wonder that Sinestro did what all he did. I'm amazed it didn't happen more often, because one of the things that comes with willpower is just being downright willful.
Right.
And, you know, wanting to do your own thing. And
Right. He's like, you know, I bet you James Brown would have been a good Green Lantern.
You know, I hadn't thought about that.
But yeah, because he likes to do his own thing.
Yeah.
He also likes to get up off of that thing.
He does.
That's what I, from what I understand, he really enjoys getting up off of that thing.
He does.
So, yes.
He's on that thing, and then he likes to get up off of it. Because, you know, it gets uncomfortable after a while.
So, yes. We will discuss the redemption of Green Lantern's Parallax, you know, the Green Lantern Parallax in the next issue. But
would he like, you know, slap everybody down and then take their ring as like a prize?
Yes, because he was trying to rebuild, have enough power. The conceit was, if you collect enough, you're going to have enough power to rebuild Coast City, basically.
Yeah.
So he was taking all comers and just taking the rings when he would whoop their ass, basically, is what he was doing. It was he was pretty badass. But we'll talk about, and he did this for a good long time. He became a pretty solid asshole for about 10 issues of the comic, and then there was a big event that he needed to step up and be a hero. So he was allowed to be redeemed. And post redemption is when he gets to become the Spectre. If you remember when Hal Jordan became the...
Oh, that's right. Wow.
Yeah. So post that redemption is when he gets to become the Spectre. So, but we'll get into that next issue. I don't want to dwell too long on Parallax, even though Parallax was a pretty big deal. So what else you got, Cole? You got another one here?
Well, again, this is where I've kind of falter, because I don't have the level of experience you've had with these characters.
Sure. But there is one that I'm going to give honorable mention to in both issues. Okay. And it's one I think you might be pretty familiar with. And actually, this one you are familiar with. This has nothing to do with Green Lantern's powers. Okay? This has everything to do with a particular story, which is Green Lantern, Green Arrow 85 by the indomitable team of Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams. A story known as Snowbirds Don't Fly.
Mm.
Snowbirds Don't Fly was a two-part, I think it was just two-issue, yes, a two-part issue, in which we find out that Green Arrow's sidekick, Speedy, has a heroin addiction.
Ah, yes.
And,
You just want Stacy Keach to come in. You know? It's my crack, uppers, downers, all arounders.
I'm just going to say, personally, for my edification... I just always want Stacy Keach to come in.
That's so very true. I mean, who wouldn't?
You said, and that's when you want Stacy Keach to come in, and I got really excited for some reason for a split second, like, oh, Stacy Keach is going to come in? I don't know why. I don't know why I had that reaction.
Well, because the man's an American treasure.
He is a hero. He is a national hero. I'm telling you, this is the weirdest thing. I had a really strong reaction to you saying...
You thought for a moment that I had a line on Stacy Keach.
I thought you were calling Stacy Keach into this show, and I got really...
Stacy,
really
are excited. You there?
Like, I've been waiting for this topic. Stacy Keach, ladies and gentlemen.
Huge, huge Green Lantern fan, as far as we know.
And I got real excited. I'm kind of ashamed to say that I got really excited about that. But yes, yeah, so... With it's interesting. It's an interesting to talk about, and we have talked about this. But you know, as one of the low moments in Green Lantern's kind of lexicon in their history, I think that we have to talk about. In this issue, we find out that that Speedy has a drug addiction. First issue, the Green Arrow finds a bunch of muggers, and those muggers have been shot with a crossbow, and that crossbow is loaded with Green Arrow arrows. Now, at this time period, Green Lantern's sales have been flagging, and so they put the Green Arrow and the Green Lantern together in the same book, and let them run around together like Kane and Kung Fu fighting street-level crime, and learn a lot about themselves, and in turn, learn a lot about each other. This is as important a Green Lantern comic book issue as was Alicia DeWitt in the first,
yeah.
I think. I think this is equally as important as that, because it was one of the first issues post Comics Code Authority. Wait a second. If I remember it, the Comics Code Authority was still in effect, and they ran without it, didn't they?
I believe that was the case. They decided that... I know that, you know, the Comics Code Authority ran for so long until finally everyone was just ignoring it, and it finally just went away. And I'm not certain if this ran without the seal or not. I think it did, because many years later, there were a couple issues of Teen Titans where they were threatening to just run without it and got their stories to go through.
Yeah, because there was an issue, Julie Schwartz was saying there was an issue, that first issue, if you look at it, it's just covered in drug paraphernalia. There's like needles and a mirror and like just anything that you could imagine was drug related.
Yeah, because they weren't really sure what heroin addicts paraphernalia was.
Right.
And they didn't have the internet, and they sure as hell didn't want to go to the police station and ask.
We're comic creators. Can you show us your heroines?
Yeah, that's right. What are you guys shooting? Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey Keach.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey Keach is here. It's you. Yeah,
we'll never take a fat man on the force again.
If you ever need to get out of a situation, the easiest way to do it is just say, "Look, Stacey Keach," and then run. It works every time. I'm
jogging in Central Park, and you know one of the Warriors jumps out and tries to come out and play, then you can just say, "Look, Stacey Keach."
I like that we're now assuming not only that everybody's into Stacey Keach, but we're assuming there's a world in which the Warriors was a documentary, and everybody knows who Stacey Keach is. God damn it! It was a documentary.
Yes, it was,
but it was.
I looked it up.
But it was. I looked it up on Netflix. It's right there.
Hill was a great documentarian. He spent weeks with the Baseball Furies.
Wait, Cole, God damn it. I'm about to say this, okay? I need you to break... Are you prepared for what I'm about to say?
Right.
Ken Burns' Baseball Furies.
Oh, dear God. That would be...
An entire Ken Burns documentary about the Baseball Furies.
And they get that guy that was... that played the general in War Games... To narrate as they slowly, you know, crawl across the graffiti.
I think we could probably get Stacey Keach.
Oh, well, that'd be even better.
There you go. Just saying. Ken Burns's Baseball Fierce as narrated by Stacey Keach. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner on our hands.
There you go.
Somebody pitch that to Netflix. They'll make anything. But yeah, it was because, A... It was O'Neill and Adams wanted to address comics, and instead of taking it into some weird galactic level, they brought it down to a street level crime. It was a pretty big deal because Speedy was a pretty well known character.
Yeah,
Roy Harper was a big deal. He was a Titan, and
Charter Titan.
Charter Titan. Yeah. In the next issue, he goes cold turkey, and in the meantime. Green Arrow and Green Lantern go after the drug lord, all that. But it's an important book, and it's also a low moment because they find out that, you know, can you be a god? So you can be a godfather to a child, but can you be a god superhero to a sidekick?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think that Batman and Superman are doing that right now with John and Damian. So I imagine it works here too.
Yeah.
And Alan Scott's Dobie Dickles?
Dobie
Dickles long since gone by this point, so yep. I think GL took this under his... but yeah, I thought that was important, and I know you're...
No, it really is, and that was a good choice, because it was one that I was familiar with that would not necessarily have crossed my mind in this context.
Yeah, because it was a pretty dark moment. I mean, yeah. It was a dark moment for comics.
Yeah, this was like when Starsky or Hutch, one of the two, got hooked on drugs by the mob, and the other one in Huggy Bear had to kind of bring him down.
It's exactly like that.
Isn't it? Yeah. I'm thinking that's what it was.
That's what it was. But it was a dark time for comic, but it was a dark time for Green Lantern. And also the Green Arrow, who, I think maybe deserves more coverage by us. I think we might have done him a disservice, because I don't know if we really talked a whole lot about him.
No, we hadn't really.
I was talking about honorable mention before I got sidetracked by that story. And this was the one I know that you know something about. And it's honorable mention in both this issue and the next issue. And that is, this is the lowest moment of the Green Lantern, okay? This is one of the lowest moments. And this is Justice League issue 5. Do you remember Justice League issue 5? Starring Blue Beetle and Missile and the Manhunter and that 80s that 80s version of Black Canary with the big white boots.
Yeah.
In this one, one of the founding members of this iteration of the Justice League was Guy Gardner. And Batman shows up on the scene, and Guy challenges Batman to a fight, Batman punches him once and knocks him out.
Yes.
Known as the One Punch. And it is referenced so many times in Green Lantern comics, the One Punch. But this is the darkest moment that in Green Lantern history, is that Guy Gardner got knocked the F out in one punch, because in the panel directly preceding the one punch, Ted Kord is just like, it just says one punch over and over again, and he's like, yes, laughing, exactly. And like wiping tears out of his eyes and saying one punch over and over again, and it keeps coming up. It's just really funny because nobody liked Guy Gardner.
Yeah,
like Guy is just an asshole. And Batman knocked him the F out, went World Star on him in one punch. So it gets honorable mention. It didn't have a huge effect on the mythos, and it wasn't like a will crushing moment. But it's
important to bring up because it's one of those moments in the history of the Green Lanterns that, on a whole, much like, you know, Guy Gardner himself, They might like to forget about that.
Yeah, they might want to walk that one back a little bit.
Yeah.
But it does continue to be an in-joke in Green Lantern comics to this day. So it has 1987 to 2018 staying power, that one joke does. We will talk more about it in the next issue, because all I've ever known is the Songs of Freedom redemption song for this particular moment. But as we come up to probably the last topic we'll talk about tonight, and that is, in my mind, probably the darkest moment for Green Lanterns, as well as one of the darkest moments for me in comic books in general, because I just didn't like the story at all. It really bothered me, and that was Blackest Night.
Yeah.
Oh, Blackest Night. So, Cole, do you have any thoughts before I get into this? Because I'm tainted by this.
Absolutely. It just seemed like, I mean, sometimes you have to shake up the universe in which your heroes live. You have to take them outside of their traditional comfort zones, outside of their, you know, the places where they have always had safety and assurances, and, you know, things have always been there for them. And really, just what Blackest Night does is give you that just sort of punch in the gut and face simultaneously. That level of just down and bad, and, you know, bringing everything to a place it's never been.
Yeah, and so the story of Blackest Night is there's a bad guy in the Green Lantern, he's the Black Hand. He's been around for quite a while. And I
want to point out, I have to give them that going with the Black Hand was a nice touch, because it's not just, you know, finding, you know, creating some new character. They're breathing a new kind of life into an existing character.
Well, and that's the one thing I will say is they borrowed, so Geoff Johns during his entire Green Lantern run, and especially in the Blackest Night, right, borrowed so heavily from the Alan Moore Justice or Green Lantern Corps books, down to even the title, which is Blackest Night, right, which mm-hmm. was the title of the Rotlop fan story.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
borrowed that. Borrowed the idea of, you know, that's pretty much when the you know Necron was created, who's the big bad in Blackest Night, the entity that's in the Black Lantern. The idea of the Black Hand being as prevalent as he is, all of those things. So he really did his homework and did a great job of bringing. It's just really bothersome to me. First of all, as a comic book reader, it was really, really hard to follow. It was convoluted because there was the core books, and then the tie-ins were like everything. Every book had a tie-in, and then there were special tie-ins on top of those tie-ins, and it was just really hard to read. I know why they did it. But they also were just like, it was a gut punch. Like you said, right? It's a repeated just gut punch after gut punch after gut punch. From the Black Lanterns being elongated man in Sue Dibney after Identity Crisis, which was just that was a big gut punch. To bringing back the Waynes, to bringing back Bruce Wayne, who Bruce Wayne at this point was dead. To Hawk and Dove, to, you know, all of these different characters. I remember the real weird one was Vibe. I was like,
yeah.
What?
Am I remembering correctly that they dug so deep they even brought back Cole, K-O-L-E, from the Titans?
Yeah, yeah.
Who died in the Crisis on Infinite Earths decades before.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing. It felt a little like fan service in the sense that they were just going to dig up their favorites just to get another shot at like
quite
one
literal.
Panel. Yeah, literally dig up their favorites so they could get their shot at one panel, you know, of having them on there. But it was definitely one of the darkest moments in the Green Lantern history and in DC Universe's history. This is when they deputized a lot of Earth's superheroes as members of the different spectrums. So you had Barry Allen became the Blue Lantern, and Mara became red, and Lex Luthor became orange, and Scarecrow became yellow, and Adam became indigo, and Wim became violet. Like, so that they could fight the Black Lantern. But the problem with this at this point is, if you went to read, if you saw all of the big hoo-to-do about you know, Blackest Night, and you were like, oh, well, I want to read that. And you picked it up to read it. At this point, it would be like me going to watch Game of Thrones. Because I watched the first three seasons, and then I stopped watching it. And I'm like, oh, well, it's the final season. I want to watch it. And I'll go back and watch it now and be like, I have no idea who the hell any of these people are or what they're doing.
Exactly.
So, like, what hit you the hardest here?
Well, I did. I do have an honorable mention.
Okay.
Solely because it is a near miss.
Okay.
In the annals of the worst of times for Green Lantern.
Okay.
And that was the period during which Warner Brothers Pictures was entertaining the thought of a riotously hilarious romp titled Green Lantern starring Jack Black.
Oh, God. Just
so if you think the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern is bad, it could have been a lot worse, Ryan. It could have been a lot worse, Canada.
Right. You could have gotten Jack
you
Black.
You could have got Jack Black that would have put Green Lantern out of the running for the next 50 years as a viable character.
My other thing is, what if it didn't? Like, what if I could go to a parallel
equally
universe?
Bad.
What if I could go to a parallel universe?
Yeah, what if you get, like, Rick and Morty's little cable channel changer?
And go to that unit was made and see it, and it's not bad? Like, I want to know what that universe... I want to see that movie.
I think, though, the problem is it becomes sort of a... I don't know, is this a Schrodinger's cat? I'm not sure, but it's one of these situations where it's not a bad movie in the context of if you live in that universe, it's not a bad movie because that's the sort of movie that's good in that universe. So is it truly not a bad movie in our universe.
No, but if you watch it from this universe and you watch it, and at the end the credits roll, you go, wasn't so bad.
But I mean, are you, is that you? Are you being influenced by your presence in the other universe? I mean, it becomes very much a Particle Man kind of thing. For those of you who enjoy the music of They Might Be Giants, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I think it is a Schrodinger's cat scenario, definitely. I'm not saying I don't enjoy
it. Not to put, on a pedestal where it doesn't belong.
Right, it could have been a whole lot worse.
Really think of that.
Could have been at all. All right, so those are real low points. There are a ton of them. The Sinestro being formed under Sinestro, we touched on a little bit. The fact that at some point
am I confusing Phoenix? But did somebody destroy a whole planet?
Oh yeah,
or a whole galaxy or something?
They did. Oh no, they did. John Stewart destroyed a whole planet.
That's as I'm racking my brain, because I felt like there had to be other things that I was familiar with, and I seem to remember somebody destroying a planet, which is never a good thing.
No, it's not. And by the way, in Blackest Night, John Stewart destroys Mogo.
Wow.
As a bad guy. It was Zanshi was the planet.
A dick move or what?
Well, he was, a Black Lantern at the time.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, it was a dick move, but it was a dick move because... So Zanshi was the planet, was in Sector 13, they had a bomb on the planet that was gonna destroy it. And he doesn't necessarily actually destroy the planet. The planet was covered in yellow, so he couldn't do anything about it. So it explodes, he can't stop it, he blames himself for it. But then, in Blackest Night, absolutely, he shoots a giant, weird, like, super bullet through the planet, and destroys it, and then, that did happen. A lot of shit's happened to Green Lanterns, a lot of really bad stuff. Do you remember Hal Jordan in Justice? That was not a great time either, when he got his willpower broken. And I think that that's worse. Let me ask you this question. All of these giant events, right? Your Blackest Night, your War of the Light, your Sinestro Corps, all of those things. Do they pale in comparison to a Green Lantern to having your will broken and not being able to use your ring? Like as one of your worst moments?
That's true. That's like, being Green Arrow and all that arrows, and it's like Sunday at 7.
It's like Sunday at 7.
So all the sporting goods stores are closed, so you can't even buy like regular people arrows. Like archery style arrows.
Well, I'm thinking that if my entire... And this is the problem.
Actually, it's worse than that Green Arrow scenario. You can always get more arrows on Monday morning or just go back home to your workshop. So no, that was a bad that was not a good corollary.
No, but I mean, when your entire identity is hinges upon your ability to harness your willpower and make it indomitable, having that taken from you has to be the thing that crushes you more than anything, because at least in those other things he could lead the charge. His ring worked for the most part. He was the he was the badass that got to go to the fight and make it
exactly
happen. And when you take that from him, that has to be a crushing moment. That has to be one of the Blackest Night moments for any Green Lantern, I would think.
Now that certainly is, because that's just basically castrating you.
Right. You're being cuckolded by fear. Weird. All right. Well, I mean, I don't think we have much more time, so I think we got to wrap this one up. Next week, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the bright spots, the crowning achievements. There's some really cool stuff to talk about.
The high points.
There's some super cool stuff to talk about next week. I'm actually really excited to talk about it. But after next week...
Ha ha ha.
we have issue 300.
Yes, indeed. We will truly be dining in hell with one Frank Miller as Maitre D.
I'm not comfortable with that at all. Like, I just, that's the opposite of saying Stacy Keach is here. I've really gone on a roller coaster.
That's like the Black Lantern of statements.
I've definitely gone on a roller coaster tonight. I from the Stacy Keach to the...
Well, yeah, that was your, you know, the brightest day.
That's right.
Stacy Keach and the is here. And your blackest night.
And then I could just see a little man in a fedora wanting to ask me how many people are in my party. And
yeah,
it's really bothersome. All right. Why don't you plug us up?
Crane looking guy.
Why don't you plug us up? We'll get out of
here. Well, thank you everybody for joining us again as we race toward 300, and you know, remain here ever in awe of how far we've gone. And thank you, Andy, for, you know, pretty much speaking of leading the charge, kind of carrying me on this this arc, which I knew you would, because this is not only in your wheelhouse, it is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, right. This is where I've lived. There's so much it's hard for me to talk about, if that gives you any indication.
Well, that and Green Lantern has become, you know, is literally the reason, the catalyst for us even meeting, much less 300 issues of this show plus. So check us out on JediCole.com, at the Jedi Cole Universe on JediCole.com. Working rather... Hopefully, it's looking like What You Think will be back with Mrs. Jedi Cole and her new Stephen Fett. And they're going to get to Aquaman before we do on this show. But I think our 302nd or 303rd issue is titled Aquaculture. And we're going to be talking about the Aquaman movie and Aquaman in all kinds of media.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. Because we both are just fresh out of Aquaman. Yeah. There is a lot to be talked about.
Go see Aquaman, for God's sake. Write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com, and check me out on the first and third Sundays of every month at dallasonair.com, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central for the Rancor Pit Live, where you can see your favorite Star Wars guys talk about the Star Wars in all kinds of different ways. And on the third Sunday of every month preceding the Rancor Pit Live, from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central, my new show, Isle of Toys, which is, relatively speaking, new now, since about a year and a half old.
Yeah, you got to stop at some point, I think.
Yeah, it's starting to get the patina of age, so I can no longer call it my new show.
Right.
But now I'll just simply call it my newest show.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good added.
But yeah, be sure and check us out over there on DallasOnAir.com and the Facebook pages for Hey Kids Comics, Isle of Toys, The Rancor Pit, and hell, even my own personal page if you're so inclined.
That's right. And you can find this show on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at HK Comics Show. We'd be happy to have any interaction you want. Send us an email, shoot me a link, you know, whatever it is. We're always looking for that. You guys are awesome. And this probably will be the last show that is released before Christmas. So everybody out there, have a safe and wonderful holiday.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Hi-do.
Damn it. yeah, have a safe and wonderful holiday. I hope you get lots of nerdliness in your stockings. And
yeah, especially hope that people heeded our Santa's sack on your behalf.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. I absolutely do. All right, say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody. Go see Aquaman, for God's sake.
Yeah, go see Aquaman, and leave some cookies and milk for Cole and I when we creep into your house tonight.
That's right.
All right, good night. Talk to you next week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.